It's the second hour of the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio, and you are very welcome back. Now, one or two comments say we were speaking about pencils earlier. Pencils are used as pens blot easily. This would be a spoiled vote. That's why pencils are recommended and available in the polling station. That's pretty much as I suggested in my comment there. With regards to the situation that one of our callers had with their wardrobe, caller says, keep the wardrobe doors open for air circulation to prevent mould. This does prevent the votes from getting spoiled. Caller says, I appreciate it's canvas time for the elections, but campaigners should never have more than two people come to a door. I witnessed nine people yesterday come to my mother's door. Only I was in, she would never have answered. If you want to vote, don't frighten the person you are asking. And that's a point that's made by a caller. Now, I want to go to Zoom, and Zoom Audio in particular, because we are joined on Zoom by a very special person. Anya Riley from the St. Mary's Convoy Club was presented with the Club Coach of the Year Award by Ladies Gaelic Football Association President Micheál Nochtam and Martin Clancy, Senior Managing Manager of Denbigh Homes, at the 2023 LGFA National Volunteer of the Year Awards ceremony at Croke Park in Dublin at the weekend. Delighted to say Anya joins us on the line. Anya, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Anya, congratulations. There are many people in many clubs up and down the country who do so much important work in terms of their local clubs. You obviously have done something special to deserve this honour.
Oh, well, yes, we all do something special. The volunteers and the coaches throughout the country, or the country, I may say, you know, do a lot of work in the clubs. And it's just so special to be recognised. You know, I'm humbled to be recognised for this award on Friday night. And we had such a brilliant night in Dublin at a special venue, Croke Park. It was just exciting. And the LGFA, the ladies LGFA, put on a great show for us. And it was lovely. And I was just proud to represent my club, St. Mary's and Convoy, and to bring the award back. It was great, just for my club and for Donegal, I presume, too, yeah.
Yeah, you've also been involved in coaching underage Donegal teams, too, so your dedication to GAA goes beyond just Convoy.
Yes, probably 9-10 years with the county as well, in the under-16s, under-14s, with a great team of coaches there, and the Donegal LGFA. It's just great, like, yeah.
In terms of the work you do, Anya, and obviously the GAA is an absolutely central part of every parish, and I think it's something uniquely Irish that I can't think of any other sporting organisation or cultural organisation in the world that would have such a local parish identity right across the country as the GAA does here.
Yes, definitely. I suppose I'm from Mayo, a place called Carrigmore-Lacan, and it was just the backbone of our village at home was the GAA. So I was brought up in that culture, and that, you know, and that's what I grew up with. Like, and that was the in thing for us to do at home, yeah, was to go and watch football, Gaelic. And I suppose I brought that through. And then I came to Drumkeen and joined the club when my two sons, Connor and Jack, joined the club in Convoy. And then I started there, went on to there. So it is, it's a place you can go and just, you make great friends. You have a great community spirit in the clubs. You know, this just, everyone watches out for each other. If you're feeling down, or if you're feeling, you know, you can go to the club, you can go and watch a game. So you watch the men's games, you watch, I tried to get to a lot of the ladies' games. I would coach the under 12s, 13s, 14s. That area is probably my area that I prefer. And it's just, you make great friends and you watch the girls grow, and the girls come in and we teach them the skills of the Gaelic, but also they're learning the skills of life, mm-hmm, you know, and making friends, fitness, You know, just dealing with everything. Like it's
they're also learning about community, even not explicitly. You're never sitting down and saying this is what community is. But in what you're doing, in your example, in the way you act, in the way you treat them, in the way you treat your colleagues on the volunteering teams, you are teaching those girls and the boys indeed as well what a community is, and that's a lesson that they're going to carry forward without actually even knowing that they've been taught it.
That's it. Yeah, they see all the people there helping. They probably don't think too much of it, but maybe in later years they will, you know, the younger girls, you know. But they learn, you know, I mean, it's the friendships. It's going on the wee bus trips to the games, and it's win, lose or draw. You know, we're a happy bunch coming back, and we stop at the shop and we have fun. And then, you know, if you win games, it's great, you know, but it's not all about winning. You know, it's all about just the inclusion of games, you know, and of participation in the games. And you're playing, you're part of a team, you know, so it's great. It's great skills through life, like, you know, for when you go to college, when you go to your job, when you go, you know, abroad, anywhere, you can take it with you. Like, it's just, it's just amazing, like, really, you know. And we try and we don't get it always right, like, but we try our best to teach them, you know.
Yeah, it must have been extra special as well that Micheál Nochtin was the president that you received the award from, because Micheál obviously living and working in Donegal, and I'm sure in your own work with the LGFA locally, you've come across Micheál locally on quite a few occasions.
Oh, of course, it was great. Great he was there, actually. I was very nervous on the night, so it was nice to meet a familiar face up there when I went up on stage. And I must say that we're very, very good. You know, Micheál is great ambassador for our Gaelic games, for our ladies. And yeah, definitely, definitely so. It was great.
Anya, congratulations again. It's great to see the award coming locally. And I know you're anxious to reflect the fact that, look, you've got this, but you're not the only volunteer in the county. And there are many, many others in St Mary's Convoy and in every other club in Donegal and farther afield who work hard. And that the whole point, and we all know, I mean, I'm sure like most people involved in GAA, you've taken the jerseys home and washed them, and you've made the tea and you've made the sandwiches, and you've done all that that seems to just happen when a GAA club goes from week to week and no one asks. It just sort of happens.
Yeah, it just happens, and you're happy to do it. Like, I love it. You know, we give so much to it, all right, yeah, but what we get back is amazing as well from our teams. Like, you know, the joy and the, you know, the just the satisfaction of watching them play, and, you know, and it's just the fun we have, you know. And you know, you go down there to training half an hour before training starts, you set up and you get ready, and then the girls come in and they're all chat about their school and all different things. So we hope that we're there for them all. I can just want to mention Maria Brown as well from my club. It was Maria that nominated me. I mean, she does just as much as me and more probably. And, I just want to thank her for nominating me, like, you know. So that's what the clubs are all about, you know. They're just, you know, they give so much, you know.
Well, Anya, congratulations again, and may you enjoy the accolade and enjoy sharing it with your colleagues. And I'm sure there'll be one or two celebrations, if there haven't been. I'm sure there's been already, but there'll be plenty of celebrating done in St Mary's Convoy. And may you all have an absolutely great time. Thank you for speaking to us this morning.
All right, Dylan, thanks very much for that. Okay, thank you.
It's our pleasure. Thank you. That is Anya there, Anya Riley, who is a member of the St Mary's Convoy Club, coaches underage girls there, and also involved in the underage intercounty team as well. Just a few comments before we move on. People that have a bus pass shouldn't have to renew them. They know who's on the waiting list. It should be renewed, like the medical card. I'm trying since November to get a bus pass for my mother. They keep giving me codes and I don't know how to do it. I don't drive and we have to take the bus. My mother is an pensioner and it should be automatic. Another caller says contractors won't come back to work in Ireland as they're not paid decent wages. They can earn better money elsewhere. So says a caller. Another caller asks, Donal, can you explain why the Palestinian people are not allowed to leave the war-torn area, yet others in the world can flee their countries? Why this? Surely all these countries offering support could offer to take some of the Palestinians. What we do know, and I'm by no means an expert on this, but I do know, and you'll recall just a few weeks ago, the border crossing between Gaza and Egypt. There is one crossing between Gaza and Egypt, and you'll recall that was very much being controlled, and very few people were being let out. You remember there was a young Irish girl who was trapped in Gaza, and it took quite a while to get her out. And the question was, would she get out? That they were leaving, they were basically allowing national people with other countries' passports and so on out. There has not been, to my knowledge, a program whereby people from Gaza can choose to cross the border into Egypt and seek international protection elsewhere. My understanding is that's just not available to the vast majority of people. What we do know is that Rafah, which is a town, if it's even the size of Letterkenny, I'm not sure it is even the size of Letterkenny, I think it's slightly smaller than Letterkenny, now has 1.2 million people in it. And that is, just imagine 1.2 million people in Letterkenny. Just let that sink in. That's the situation in Rafah at the moment. I have no doubt that countries would bring in people from Palestine if the people stuck in Rafah and those stuck in Palestine and Gaza in particular wanted to leave. Question mark is number one, do they want to leave? A lot of people, I think, would be insistent on staying in their homes such as they are. It's a very, very complex and complicated international geopolitical situation, but I absolutely take the point you're making, Connor, and I have no doubt that if there were Palestinian refugees, that countries would certainly take them in. 22 minutes past 10 on the 9 till noon show. Now, there's a lot of talk about the potential of developing rail in Donegal. Now, whether it's a link that goes from Derry to Letterkenny and then on down to Sligo, or it's a link, as Minister Eamon Ryan seems to suggest, that would go from Donegal and east over through Tyrone over toward Portadown. It's on the agenda and it's been spoken about. It's not going to happen in the short term, but there is a definite push toward rail, particularly in the context of the Major North-South Rail Review, which is to be published, which has been published, and we'll see the extent to which it will be implemented in the coming months and years. Louise is a Donegal resident who has some concerns, and she joins us on the line. Louise, good morning.
Morning. I suppose I'm just calling in because there doesn't seem to be too much activity from the, you know, the people representing Donegal in Dublin. I don't think many people realise there's a €37 billion now assigned to this.
Yeah.
People have talked about the Donegal Rail for years, but this is the time now when the decision has been made. So there's €37 billion. There's plans to lay 650 kilometres of new tracks. The draft of the original report was published in July. And I suppose I have serious concerns about whether anybody has actually even, from Donegal, other than Thomas Pringle, seems to have even read this. You know, when it was published, you had Pardon McLaughlin and Pierce Doherty, they said, you know, they were quoted celebrating the plan when the draft was released, and you would think they hadn't even read it. So this is a 20-year plan. People saying one stop in Letterkenny would be sufficient, you know, a starting point. But this is a 20-year plan. So, you know, if it's not in it, it's not getting there.
The point you're making is that there's a lot of talk about bringing rail to Donegal and we'll have a stop in Letterkenny, and that's all that's ever said. And your belief is it needs to be more broad than that, that there needs to be more stops, there needs to be a more intensive rail network within Donegal connecting to outside. And if we just limit it to Letterkenny, we're going to be doing ourselves an injustice.
For sure. That's not even just my opinion. Like the report that was published, it was published in three stages. And so these decisions that are being made now, they're part of this long-term strategic plan for the whole island. So the government essentially had outsourced, you know, Eamon Ryan had outsourced, in conjunction with Northern Ireland, outsourced a consultancy firm to do this report. And so it came through in three documents. Now, fair enough, they are very, very, very long documents. I read all three documents. And essentially, this is what has happened for Donegal. And this is how it kind of went down for Donegal. So the first report was basically looking into where are the connectivity gaps in Ireland? Where do we need to, you know, to put these new trains? Where do we need to upgrade trains? So that report showed a clear need. They had lots of charts. You can go and look through report one. Showed a clear need for a northwest train route from Donegal down to Sligo, Galway, Limerick, Cork. So this would be really investing in the whole west coast of Ireland. So really good report one showed a clear need. Other things that they showed in report one was they showed things like the importance of connecting towns to your nearby cities, and for example, connecting up all the coasts. One example is Tralee to Dublin. That route 40% of the travel was to Cork. So really big uptake and really important for that relationship with the local cities. It also showed that most of the travel is not done end-to-end. So, for example, Belfast to Dublin, only 6% of people are Belfast to Dublin. The stops along the way is where the gain of the route is. They went through all the major stops. They got all the statistics of how people are using these trains all over Ireland, all the routes. And in most cases, it's kind of less than 20% of the travel is between the kind of end-to-end lines. Like, say, Galway-Dublin, 16% of travel is between the cities. The real gain for the route is having these stops along the way. So putting one little stop in Letterkenny is really just a joke, and then saying, hey, Northern Ireland, you can connect us up to the rest of the country. Like the plan that they put through then Report 2 proposed a really nice route for Donegal. So it was there, it was proposed, it was saying we have a need for it. They proposed a really nice route going right through Letterkenny, down Ballybuffet, Donegal town, straight down to Sligo. Sligo obviously connects, they were connecting that up to Galway. Galway already connects to Limerick. They proposed to connect Limerick to Cork directly without going through the junction. Really nice route. Somehow in Report 3, they just de-scoped it. No real clear explanation at all. Conflicting information, if anything, in Report 3. It just got de-scoped.
So you believe there hasn't been enough impetus in terms of trying to build on those reports, and the silence you fear coming from Dublin at the moment is deafening?
The report is questionable anyways. So, like, the language they use in the report, so they name their core plan as the spine, and they call this the spine. They keep talking about this spine plan. When they consider all the routes, the spine is Dublin to Belfast and Dublin to Cork. Now, forgive me, but a spine is very lopsided if that's the spine. You know, they're just completely, if everybody wants to continue to be heavy-weighted on Dublin, and Dublin being the centre of Ireland, then you can keep and go with the spine report. You know, in Report 2, they separated the Donegal route from the regional connectivity routes. It was like they were trying to find ways to just separate it. They separated off, they called it a package 4, separated Donegal out. But when it was being considered and scored, it was being scored by itself with the connection from Limerick to Cork, and it was being referred to as a rural route. Now, rural on the CSO, less than 1,500 people in an area, and Donegal is certainly bigger than that. So separating it out, calling it rural, and then scoring it against a regional route. Donegal down to Sligo is certainly considered regional. So that was unacceptable. Just the language, the choice, they just decided to de-scope it. There's no two ways about it. And then when you have people from, like politicians coming out and saying they're celebrating it, Thomas Pringle, as I say, is the only one who read that report and then went out to the press and said, this is unacceptable. The route is there. It's proposed. They show the need. They show the solution. They have 37 billion. Like, they're ready to go. It's just been de-scoped, and nobody seems to be pushing for it.
Is it your fear that it's not going to happen in terms of what we will eventually see is that the drive toward getting a rail link to Donegal won't happen because we'll be told ultimately, well, it would be a rural route and we can't afford it?
That's exactly what's been said. Like, if you read, they have given like maybe four sentences about to, in Report 3, they've referred to this. This is all on online if anyone wants to, you know, go and have a read of it. But Report 3 of this, you know, All-Ireland Strategic Plan, they keep repackaging things and scoring them against different things. So then, you know, Report 2, they package it up as this rural route. Package 4, the next one, they packaged it up as a separate route, and they called it the West Coast route. Then at the very end, they just say, you know, this route is going to be too expensive, and, you know, it's high environmental impact. Other parts of the report, they literally score it and they say, here's all the regional routes, and actually they all have a comparable, you know, environmental impact. So it doesn't really, there's no satisfactory reason that they've given as to why it was cut. It was just cut.
Is it your belief that a route from Donegal, down from Letterkenny, we'll say, down through Ballybuffet, Stranorter, down through Donegal Town, Ballyshannon, Bundoran, down towards Sligo, and then down further down the western seaboard. And even possibly, I'm sure, our friends in Inishowen will say, well, why don't you bring a spur down from Punkranna as well? I mean, do you believe that sort of a route can be made financially viable? Because the argument is always going to be that you will not get sufficient passenger demand on a route like that to make it economically viable to develop a railway, bearing in mind
they've forecasted it under their own numbers. This route doesn't stack up any worse than really any of the other routes on their own forecasting that they've done for this and their own report. It doesn't stack up as a particularly bad route, like, and it creates some sort of balance. Say, for example, an example of county where they have a single stop like that is Limerick City. So Limerick City has 50% of the population living in the city centre. So, you know, it's not great that they just have that stop. And, you know, it's an extension stop, similar like what they're proposing now, as you know, this shortcut route for Donegal, like that, this lighter investment. It's the same kind of a stop. But Letterkenny has 13% of the population of the county. Donegal is a much different spread than a county like Limerick. Letterkenny is just one town. If you invest in one single town, you're going to change the whole balance of the county of Donegal, and you are going to leave the rest of the county behind. It's mad that Donegal people are expected to be satisfied with this one little stop, and they're putting out, you know, notes in the paper saying, oh, rail returns to Donegal. No, it's an absolute joke to say that rail would be returned to Donegal by just...
Oh, I think we're a long way away from rail returning to Donegal, and even from any form of commitment. I mean, these reports, as you say, they're reports done by consultants. They were commissioned. It was a cross-border commission, and it's a cross-border report. But this report has absolutely no policy bearing. It has absolutely no bearing on government policy or government impetus into the future. This is the recommendations of consultants. How this is actually implemented politically is a completely different story, and that is a long way down the line, I suspect.
Well, this is a 20-year plan. The money is put aside for this. Like, all of these things have been debated for, you know, many years. But this is the time to put the push. The options are mapped out. They're being weighed up against each other. Like, to say that the political foundations of what policy or whatever what is going to be decided, this is fully the foundations of this conversation.
Yeah.
These routes and this route that's already been dismissed is the foundation of saying, no, you're not getting this. So this is the time to say, I'm not satisfied with this report. We can't go forward with this kind of a recommendation, which all but leaves Donegal out of the plan. It's a lot of money and a lot of plan. If you look at I'm absolutely no fan of the Healy Raids, but if you look at what they have lobbied for a place like Kerry, in Kerry, it's a very comparable place in comparison to Donegal in terms of the distance from major cities like Dublin and Galway, in distance of spread of rural populations. But if you want to get from Uncrana, for example, to Dublin, it's about 6 hours over two buses. A similar destination Kerry, you can do for 2.5 hours on a train, but cheaper.
Yeah.
And the benefits that you get for that in Kerry has double the tourism income of what Donegal has. Slightly less population than Donegal, double the tourism income. What that would look like is another 20 four or five star hotels being that revenue coming in to Donegal. It's a lot of money. They've got hundreds of millions of money, and it's because of investments like this. And if the people who are representing Donegal do not push for Donegal to be included in this plan, they're doing a serious disservice to the people that live here.
But the reality is, even if you were, and we'll say for the sake of argument, if you were to develop a rail spur from Buncrana into Derry, you're still talking Buncrana Derry, Derry Belfast, Belfast Dublin. It's still going to be hitting the five, six hour mark in terms of the journey, even if you could do it by rail, because we don't have a direct spur from the northwest down into Dublin. And whatever does happen with this, I don't think we'll ever see a situation where you will get a direct link from Derry down to Dublin into which Buncrana and Letterkenny can feed. The best you could probably hope for in terms of rail is either what Maimon Ryan talks about, which is a spur from the northwest over toward Portadown and then go down to Dublin that way, or go Derry, Belfast, Belfast, Dublin. And even still, that's going to take a long time.
Yeah, it also changes the relationship of the country. You know, the place that you can access quickly is the place that you're going to go. When you build a better road, you improve the relationships, or better train, you improve the relationships between the neighbouring cities. It's going to change the balance of how things are. And we know we want to go down to Sligo. We want to go down to Galway. Galway is the fastest growing urban population in Ireland for the last number of years. But Galway is a thriving city. This you know, obsession with, fair enough, what it, maybe it was 8 out of 15 of the ministers are, you know, Dublin, and they're in office. And the whole thing is extraordinarily Dublin centred. You know, it comes back to this, calling it the spine of Ireland. Like, we would like to be connected to the West Coast. Like, there are other places of Ireland that are worthy of being linked up together. And, you know, not everything is literally just a train and a route coming out of Dublin. And it shouldn't have to be. And if they continue to do the analysis the way they're doing it and make the decisions they're making, it's, you know, I've literally read every single page of all these reports.
Yeah, I absolutely take it on board.
It's really acceptable to not connect us up to the West Coast.
Yeah, I totally take that on board, Louise. And I have to say, as someone who has to travel to Galway a fair bit for personal reasons, I would absolutely love a trade line from Letterkenny to Galway, because believe you me, that would make my life an awful lot easier. It would be absolutely great to be able to get from Donegal down to Galway by train. That would change my life, actually, as it happens. But listen, Louise, it's a really interesting point, and thank you very much
indeed
for speaking to us.
It would open up the University of Galway. It would open up the University of Limerick. It would open up those places, those opportunities to people. You know, when people are coming out of school here, they don't have a lot of opportunities, because they want to come back and take up a job at the weekend. They want to come back and see their families, you know. And of course, student prices on the train are exceptionally affordable. You can get from Galway to Dublin, similar distance from Galway to somewhere like Valuable Face, in similar distance. You can take that for €8 as a student and get there in 2.5 hours. So very feasible for someone to make that. If we had that on a train, you're all of a sudden opening up so many more opportunities. You know, and it's not just students. Like, lack of transport affects employment. People aren't hiring remote hybrid workers. I have friends who cannot get jobs in Donegal because employers are perceiving them as disconnected. And even if it's a remote job, you know, or hybrid, workers can't get to quarterly on-site meetings. They can't do any travel, you know, and employers aren't hiring them. So this is a 20-year plan, and yet there's just not an acceptable level of questioning of this. You know, and this is the time to do it.
Well, hopefully that discourse will improve and extend. Thank you very much indeed, Louise. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you, and we look forward to that debate developing. But in the meantime, Louise, thank you very much indeed. That's Louise, and some very interesting comments about rail. Now, we are going to change tack, and we're going to change tack completely, because I'm going to Zoom and I'm welcoming onto the programme Garan Noon, who will be appearing on Saturday night next in the Villarose Hotel in Ballybofey. Garan, it's an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you getting on? Thanks for having me.
On a lovely, there's a lovely, delicious feel suddenly come to the show now this morning, which is great to see.
thank you very much.
Garan, I had a conversation with my daughter recently, and my daughter is not in her 20s anymore, and my youngest turns 30 this year. That's where I'm coming from, age-wise. So, I mean, you know, I have mentioned, I saw you were coming on the programme, and I know you for one thing and for one thing only that I saw recently and absolutely loved, and that's the your questioning of lines with regards to their teabag shapes, which I absolutely agree 100%, because we were told that pyramids were the way to go, and then suddenly they went back to the flats and expected us to accept that without question. And fair play to you, you're asking the important questions. I mentioned your name to my daughter and her eyes lit up. It's like, and I said, I can't say I know too much about him. And she went, what? How can anyone not know about Garan Noon? He's amazing. Garan, I love the phrase TikToker, but that's effectively what you are. You're one of these people who have forged an identity for themselves and have forged a career for themselves on TikTok, to the extent that you can now go and set out a place like the Villarose.
Yeah, it's a strange one. When I started TikTok, I didn't even have the app, so I had no understanding that people were doing it. I just used to post the odd update on my stories when I was doing music gigs, and people were like, oh, you should put them on TikTok. So I started putting up a video of me reviewing cereal, And people watched it. And then I made a video of me reviewing all the ice creams in the shop. And even more people watched it. So then I was like, oh, sure, I'll keep making these videos now. It's amazing to me how many people see them. I go out and people have actually watched me eat a bag of crisps and talk about what it tasted like.
It's interesting because I'm thinking of the career trajectory of, for instance, dare I say, Billy Connolly, because I mean, Billy Connolly started as a folk musician who went to folk clubs. He played with Jerry Rafferty in the Humble Bums. Then he went to folk clubs. He played his banjo and he told stories. And what he noticed was happening was the stories got longer and the banjo got shorter until eventually he suddenly realised he was a comedian without ever actually deliberately setting out to become one. And it seems to me you're on a sort of a similar trajectory.
Yeah,
that
it's,
people
it's
are going
kind
to
of
the
a
gig.
Similar thing. So, so I play songs throughout my gig and then I kind of go off on tangents about things like I do online in between the songs. And it's great crack. I had no aspiration to be a comedian. Never even crossed my mind. It's only really since the TikTok thing has come up that it's even been on my radar. So it's amazing what the internet can do when you put a few videos of eating cereal out there.
Okay, is this putting you in a difficult position? Because you're doing a gig and in your head you're a musician and you're going to play your music and you're going to tell some stories. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that a fair whack of your audience is going there to hear you shout at Lion's Tea and hear you talk about ice cream and cereal. And does that put you in a bit of a dichotomy? Because on the one hand, you're a musician and you want to put the music out there. But on the other hand, you now have to cater to this audience of predominantly younger people who are there because of TikTok.
Yeah, well, surprisingly enough, it's all ages. So I have people in their 70s coming up to me going, oh, I love your TikToks and stuff like that, right down to 4 and 5 year olds. The shows are meant to be entertaining. So when we go and do the shows, I'm kind of trying to give people what they're expecting. So there'll be a lot of that kind of talk from my TikTok. Most of the music I do is kind of more fun, engaging kind of stuff, getting the crowd involved sort of stuff. I'm not really trying to force, you know, music at people or anything. I'm kind of happy out doing what I'm doing and having the crack with people. It's great crack.
And in terms of the music, is it what's the balance of your own stuff versus covers? I mean, you're doing your own stuff.
I need to do
well,
one or two of my own songs. Yeah. It's mostly like when I'm doing the shows, what I really want is to entertain people, get people involved, and not be trying to introduce people to new things too much.
Yeah. So do a few covers, do a few well-known songs, get a bit of audience participation going.
That's it, yeah.
Snake one or two of your own in while they aren't looking.
Exactly.
In terms of, and here's a question I actually have. I'm going to ask you the question straight out. How difficult is it to monetize TikTok? Because it seems to me, on social media in particular, you can go on social media and you can have thousands upon thousands watching what you're doing on social media. If those same thousands and thousands were buying a CD that you had released, you'd be getting a fair whack of money out of it.
Yeah.
But because it's free and, you know, how do you monetize it? Can you actually make a career out of this, or do you find yourself famous and broke?
Well, so I'm kind of lucky in the respect that I've always been performing. So I used to do gigs and pubs and all that. I did that for like 10 years and I was sort of teaching music. So it's easy for me because I can kind of go and do shows and interact with the audience. Maybe not everybody necessarily is going to have that right out of the gate. And then also you can do sponsorships. So companies will approach me to do a funny video for them. I've got a funny video coming up with Apache soon where I go on a nice date. So there's things like that you can use to monetize it. What it's really about is a consistent audience. So if you've got people watching you regularly, it's a little bit easier to monetize, but there's not many people in the country doing it as a job. There's really only a few of us.
So it's and I suppose the difference is now you're creating a name for yourself online. So Garan Noon comes to Ballybuffet. Garan Noon now comes to Ballybuffet and plays and sells out the Villa Rose with tickets at 21:30. 5 years ago, Garan Noon may have come to Ballybuffet and played a local pub and passed a hat around. Is that effectively the difference?
Yeah, 100%. Not 5 years ago. I was playing pubs four months ago.
Yeah.
So I was pretty well known then, but I wasn't monetizing it in any way, shape or form. I didn't really even know that you could. The pubs got a bit hectic then, so I kind of had to stop doing it. But Yeah, I was doing pubs until very recently. So the idea of doing ticketed events where people actually wanted to come and see me, I didn't really expect that to ever happen.
So did you have to go out and get an agent and enter into this whole business world of showbiz that you never really thought you'd be getting involved in?
It's a strange thing. You know, yeah. I had no expectation that it was going to happen. So, and it's kind of happened over the last year. So it's been very surprising. I know a lot of people want to do TikTok. It's like a new, you know, thing. Everybody wants to be an influencer or whatever you want to call it. But it really has. I think if you've got ideas and stuff to do and you want to do them, you should do them, because it's totally transformed my life for however long it will. And I had no expectation that it would.
Do you have any sort of forward view in terms of I must do X amount of TikToks, I must put new content up, be it every week or every fortnight, and I must sit down and plan how I'm going to do this and how I'm going to keep the consistency going? Or do you just have an idea, chuck it out there, see what happens?
I try to be fairly consistent about it. So when I started it off, I realized that I used to do sales, so I used to do cold calling where I'd ring up companies, like 100 companies a day. And most of them would say no to you, but you might get one or two a week, say, that you got a sale for. And I kind of take the same approach with TikToks, where I kind of figured if I made one every day, most of them would be crap, but one or two of them would be all right and people would watch them. And that was the attitude that I did. Now, the quality has steadily improved over time, but at the start, most of them were not good.
I mean, you are honing it, and you have a much better idea in terms of editing, in terms of timing, in terms of pacing, and in terms of, you know, what's going to hit and what isn't. And I suppose you're building up that sort of knowledge almost instinctively within yourself, that you have an idea, no, that won't hit, that will hit. Do you have a target demographic when you put stuff out there, or do you just put it out there and everyone from 3-year-olds to 70-year-olds, although with the 3-year-olds, sometimes the language can be, shall we say, not part
of it. Yeah, I think so too.
I'd be fairly honest, I wouldn't be showing too many of your TikToks now with 3-year-olds.
Yeah.
And I know indeed there is an over 18 warning on the show as well, so I suppose that we can take it that the language in the show won't necessarily be parliamentary either.
Yes. Unfortunately not. I try my best, but...
Well, as I said, the Lions one, you wouldn't be... I would love to play it on air, but I won't. But it's really, really
I was pretty
good.
Upset about that now, in fairness.
Yeah. Do you know what? I sort of
remember that ad was on circulation when those tea bags came out. It was etched into my memory.
I remember that pyramid tea bag rolling around,
telling me it was perfect.
Yeah.
And then to sweep it from under me.
Yeah.
No. I was shook.
You know, I once tried to do a bit of comedy writing years back, and I tried to. It seemed to me that there was a time when all washing up liquid suddenly became non-bio, but all yogurt became bio, and I had this idea that somehow all the bio had been taken out of the washing up liquid, and or they're not the washing capsules for the washing machine, and all the washing powder and washing capsules suddenly became non-bio. Yogurt suddenly became bio, and I had this idea that they'd taken all the bio out of the washing capsules and put it into the yogurt. And are you really sure you want to eat that? You know, so it's interesting. And your stuff is out there. As you say, you are you do promote your deliciousness. Follow me, I'm delicious, absolutely. I believe is one of your lines. But and there does seem to be quite a bit about between food and cereal and ice cream and everything else. You like your grub?
Oh, Jesus, I do, yeah. And I do, don't we all? I think that's why so many people watch it, because it's a bit of a unifying factor.
Okay.
Everybody likes food.
Yeah, it's a fair point, actually, because, I mean, not everyone drinks champagne, not everyone necessarily drinks gin, but we all like a cup of tea.
Yeah.
So, hey,
exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
It's good.
My page is built on food, tea, and the weather. That's what I talk about. Everybody loves it.
Do you know what? I'll tell you something. Whenever we look at the various metrics on our website, and you look at what sort of stories get the biggest audience, I guarantee you the stories that get the biggest audience time after time after time are weather stories.
So tea, 100% believe
tea, food and weather, Garen, you're on a winner. Listen, I'm really looking forward. I think I'm going to go to the show, and I'm really looking forward to it, actually, because it's good. I mean, you know, I like a bit of comedy and I like to be entertained, and you always have come across as someone who's got the feet firmly planted on the ground, and you're sometimes people try to be your mate down the pub who's great crack, and they try to be that and they fail. You're not trying and you're succeeding.
I think, listen, I think I just go off. If I find something interesting, there's a part of my brain when I'm looking at a new story or something like that, or I say something that's way overly invested in it and that's absolutely furious about it. And I just let that part of my brain out. And I think everybody has that. Everybody was way too furious about the tea bags. Everybody loves a Chinese an irrational amount. And it's just that. That's all it is.
Garen, it's been an absolute pleasure. We wish you all the best with the show. And may you continue making TikToks. And may you continue making us all laugh. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
That's Garen Noon there, appearing in the Villa Rose on Saturday night next. Tickets £21.30 in total, including booking fees and all that stuff that you suddenly have to get involved in when you get agents. And it is an over 18 show because, as we said, the language will not be parliamentary. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. We're going to change tack completely. We're going to go speak on Zoom to Joe Sweeney, who is the chair of the IFA in Donegal. A lot of discussion in recent times about the impact on farming of dogs, and it recently emerged that Donegal County Council has issued one fine for offences under the Control of Dogs Act last year. And Joe Sweeney, as I say, of the IFA, joins us on the line. Joe, is this a matter of concern to you that in a county where there is such an important agricultural sector, particularly in terms of sheep, that there's been one fine for offences under the Control of Dogs Act?
No, it's alarming, to be honest. We have the county with the largest amount of sheep in Ireland. Now we have a country where we have around 7 million dogs or 7 million cattle. We have 3 million breeding ewes, and we have 800,000 dogs, roughly, and about 208,000 of them have a license. So about 600,000 dogs that no one knows where they are or who owns them. They're not microchipped or nothing. So them dogs, they're just out there, and there's no responsibility, there's no nothing. So there's a whole area there that needs to be tightened up, because like the farmer, he has his cattle, he has his sheep, they're identified, they're tagged, they're there, and they know where they are from all the time. But dogs, it's a different story.
The councils are saying that they either can't afford to, or they don't have the resources to employ dog wardens. And I'm sure you would argue there aren't enough dog wardens employed in Donegal. And in many cases, those who act as dog wardens also have other responsibilities in the context of their day-to-day work. And those other responsibilities at times, I suspect, may actually overtake the dog responsibility, as it were.
Yeah, well, that's true. And so probably the nature of the county, it's big, it's vast. There's a lot of sea, there's a lot of mountains, so there's a lot of places for people to go walking, which we don't mind that, but it's just when there's a dog kill, then it's just not followed up on. A lot of the kills that happen are actually underreported. That's part of the problem, and then they're not followed up on, because like there's a kill in the country every week, at least every week, and some of them are savage, the amount of sheep that are being killed.
And there have been kills in Donegal as well that we're aware of, and some of those savage too. And obviously one kill is too many. And you do believe that there may well be a correlation between, on the one hand, the number of dog wardens in the area and the number of fines issued and the extent to which the licensing of dogs and the microchipping of dogs is monitored, and the number of sheep attacks that take place.
Yeah, well, like the law has, they have brought into law there on the beginning of December 23 that there's a €300 fine for on the spot for dog handlers that are not controlling dogs. But sure, how is that going to be implemented is the question. It's grand bringing in this, but if there's no one then to implement it, then it's a waste of time.
In terms of the Gardaí, there's not really much the Gardaí can do on a day-to-day basis in terms of dog control. This is the responsibility of the council. Gardaí will do what they can, but sometimes we maybe have an over-reliance on Gardaí, or this assumption that Gardaí will resolve everything, when the reality is they can't.
They can't, no. Like, the Gardaí are always called, and in fairness, they respond and do their best, but they only can work with what... where there's evidence or whatever, they'll follow up on that. But a lot of times there is no evidence, there's very little or no evidence of sheep kills. And it's really, it's back to the dog owners to take responsibility for controlling dogs, like, because, you know, the, even during the summer months or on the springtime when they go for walks, like, they should keep the dog on leash. I see them myself on mountains and stuff. They'll go for walks, but just keep the dog on a leash, because if you let that dog off the leash, it's still a working farm off the path you're walking on. And the I've seen dogs running myself through mountains after sheep. It's not acceptable.
Joe Sweeney, we will certainly keep an eye on the situation. One fine issued by Donegal County Council under the Control of Dogs Act last year, as I say, new legislation is now in place, and we'll see how that works. Joe, in the meantime, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. It's an interesting story, I'm sure, and hopefully this will have helped raise awareness of it. Thank you very much indeed, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
It's a minute to 11, time for a short break. News with Donna Marie after these.